upholding scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captive of a scientific, technological elite.
We've signed a climate convention on the importance of economic instruments and free markets. Were included in this mammoth Agenda 21 document and the Rio Declaration. Well, let me be clear on one fundamental point. The United States fully intends to be the world's preeminent leader in protecting the global environment.
Coming up, Technocracy News. And greetings for another week. This is Patrick Wood for Technocracy News and Trends. Today is June 17, 2019, and I'm always amazed at the topic of man-made climate change or global warming continues to come up and continues to be a sore point of discussion throughout the world. Many people understand that the global warming hysteria is fraudulent, absolutely uncalled for, and unsupported in scientific literature. However, enough scientists and certainly enough politicians have been bought off to where data is reported in support of global warming, man-made global warming, and man-made climate change. It was very clever that when the global warming mantra started to fail and people started to generally recognize that there was something seriously wrong with the science, that the people promoting global warming simply changed their designation to climate change. Well, that's much more innocuous, and that gives the leeway to be warming or cooling. And I expect we're going to start hearing about cooling pretty soon. But to answer some requests for documentation on the alternative view to man-made global warming, I posted an article today that contains over 160 leading articles and videos that debunk the global warming myth. This is a master list of articles that you should save and always have at the ready to give to people who want documentation. Those who say, well, deniers are just stupid and they deserve to be punished. Well, that's a religious proposition to be sure. Kind of like the Salem witch trials where if people were suspected to be witches, they were burned at the stake. Well, now you have some evidence and proof in one place where you can give to people and perhaps they will read some of these articles, listen to some of these videos, and be convinced themselves that they're deceived. So I urge you to save this article. The title of it is Extensive Anthology That Refutes Man-Made Global Warming. It's on today's feed. Bookmark it. Maybe read some of the articles yourself. Listen to some of the videos. They're pretty revealing. And these are top people, by the way. These are not just armchair critics of global warming. These are actual scientists and engineers who have reviewed the entire scientific literature and said this is cracked, it's not working. The second article today is really very disturbing in a sense that there's an unholy alliance being set before us when DNA meets facial recognition. Now, we already know the dangers of DNA analysis and identification. We already know the issues with facial recognition, like what's being used in China for ubiquitous surveillance of everybody that ever hits the street. But now there's a new linkage between DNA and facial recognition. The article starts out, technology was once only seen in dystopian science fiction is rapidly infecting real life. Two means of collecting personal data, DNA databases and facial recognition software, are forming an unholy alliance, and the privacy implications could be devastating. Privacy concerns surrounding DNA and facial recognition aren't anything new, as the popularity of DNA genealogy websites like Ancestry, DNA, and 23andMe increase, so do questions over who has access to that data and how will it be used. The use of facial recognition and other biometric data technology is on the rise, and people are expressing concerns and outrage about that technology as well. Genealogy sites have been making the news of late, mainly for concerns over how our personal data is used and who has access to that information. Well, now, DNA and facial recognition have merged, a development that is sure to ignite new concerns over privacy and how our most personal data is collected and used. A team of engineers just built an algorithm that scans through a database of images and selects the faces that could be linked to the DNA found at a crime scene. Until now, predicting what someone's face looks like based on a DNA sample has eluded scientists, but it is getting easier for them to use samples to filter the right face from a database, as an international team led by researchers at KU Leuven have shown. Their findings were published in Nature Communications. Our physical appearance, including our facial details, is hardwired into our genetic material, they claim. Scientists have already identified multiple genes that determine the shape of our face, from the distance between our nostrils to the shape of our chin. Some of that research was also conducted by a team at KU Leuven. Back in 2018, they identified 15 genes that determine our facial features. As of now, the ability to use the information to find a match between a DNA sample from a crime scene and someone in a DNA database does not exist. But it appears scientists are getting closer to making that a possibility, and they're saying that they've already done this, actually. This is pretty crazy. They're already touting how useful this will be in law enforcement to further certify and verify potential criminals. The problem is, again, if it's only, say, 70% accurate, what happens to the other 30% of errors that falsely identify people? You see, this is already a problem. This is a problem with pre-crime analysis altogether. They say it's 90% accurate or 80%, whatever. Whatever the figure, doesn't matter. It's not 100%. If it were 100% accurate, that would be one thing, but it's not. And so for the sake of catching a few criminals, everybody in society gets listed as a suspect. This is absolutely wrong. And only a technocrat mind could come up with this, by the way. Anybody else with common sense would say, no, this is not the way the justice system works in America. We don't take wild stabs in the dark to try and find out who a perpetrator is. That's what police work is for. The people that are applying this technology to police work should get a badge and get out and work in the field for a while and find out what life is really all about and find out what law enforcement is supposed to be there for in the first place, which is not to make everybody a criminal, but it's to protect and serve the public. The third article will just give you a tickle in your tickle bone, because there have been recently massive protests down in Hong Kong over an extradition treaty that was going to be signed between Hong Kong and China. That would give China the right to extradite people directly from Hong Kong. For what purposes? Well, for criminal prosecution, or just simply for disappearing, which is pretty common in China these days. But these young Hong Kong protesters that showed up by the hundreds of thousands, they understand what the surveillance state is, and they don't trust China any farther than they can throw it. So, as they say, necessity is the mother of invention. Well, these wary protesters dumped recognizable social media accounts for VPNs, that's virtual private networks, and end-to-end encrypted messaging apps. The article says, the moment the 25-year-old protester got home from demonstrations that turned violent, tear gas still stinging her eyes, she knew what she had to do: delete all of her Chinese phone apps. WeChat was gone. So was Alipay and the shopping app Taobao. She then installed a virtual private network on her smartphone to use with a secure messaging app, Telegram. That's Telegram, T-E-L-E-G-R-A-M, available on iOS as well as Android, in an attempt to stay hidden from cyber monitors. I'm just doing anything to stay ahead of police surveillance and hide her identity, said the protester. She has to be referred only by her first name, Alexa, to avoid drawing the attention of authorities amid the most serious groundswell against Chinese-directed rule in Hong Kong since 2014. Protests that expanded over this past week against a bill allowing extraditions to mainland China were marked by something unprecedented: a coordinated effort by demonstrators to leave no trace for authorities and their enhanced tracking systems. A little background on this, by the way. The Tiananmen Square protest that happened several years ago, where many protesters were killed, still has lingering memories in China and anybody associated with China. They realized that anybody that was associated with those protests had basically vanished over a period of time. They also suppressed the memories of the protests in general. But as the recent anniversary came up on the Tiananmen Square protest, China made a concerted effort to track down anybody who was making comments about Tiananmen Square, and they were taking appropriate action to blacklist them in their social credit scoring system. Or worse, the police showed up at the door. Some of them certainly disappeared in the middle of the night. So protesters used only secure digital messaging apps such as Telegram and otherwise went completely analog in their movements, buying single-ride subway tickets instead of prepaid stored value cards, foregoing credit cards and mobile payments in favor of cash, and taking no selfies or photos of the chaos. They wore face masks to obscure themselves from CCTVs, and in fear of facial recognition software, they bought fresh pay-as-you-go SIM cards. That's for their telephones. And unlike the pro-democracy movement in 2014, the latest demonstrations have also remained internationally leaderless in another attempt to frustrate police, who have used tear gas and rubber bullets against the crowds. Well, that didn't work. That just pushed them further into disappearing from social media. On Saturday, Hong Kong Chief Executive Carrie Lam announced the postponement of the extradition bill, saying she hoped to return peace to the streets of the city. But the measure was not fully withdrawn, and Lam still expressed support. Protesters, meanwhile, have called for another major show of defiance on the streets on Sunday. That would be yesterday. Amid the chaos, Hong Kong has offered a picture of what it looks like to stage mass civil disobedience in the age of a surveillance state. Bonnie Leung, leader of the Hong Kong-based Civil Human Rights Front, said the Chinese government will do a lot of things to try to monitor our own people. Leung cited media coverage of Chinese use of artificial intelligence to track individuals and its social credit score system. "We believe that could happen to Hong Kong too," she said. Of course, if China was successful to take over Hong Kong in every way, it would take it over. The core of the protest is over the belief that Beijing, which was handed back control of the former British colony more than 20 years ago, is increasingly stripping Hong Kong of its cherished freedoms and autonomy. But the identity masking efforts by the protesters also reflect deep suspicions that lines between Hong Kong and China no longer exist, including close cooperation between Hong Kong's police and their mainland counterparts, who have among the most advanced and intrusive surveillance systems. Anthony DePerrin, who wrote a book on protest culture in Hong Kong, said, "It is the fundamental reason why people are protesting in the first place. They don't trust Beijing. They don't trust their authorities and the legal system, and they don't like the blurring of lines between Beijing and Hong Kong." For many who had taken to the streets over the past week, the fight was a familiar one. 2014, protesters occupied Hong Kong's main arteries for 79 days, demanding full universal suffrage in the territory. Prominent student leaders and activists marshaled up support night after night in many cities that had been set up on Hong Kong's thoroughfares until they were eventually cleared out by police. Today, all of the most prominent leaders of that movement, Joshua Wong, only a teenager at the time of the protest, legal scholar Benny Tai, and Chan Kin Man, a sociology professor, are in jail. Well, of course, protesters today are going to be concerned about all of the interaction between Hong Kong and China, but they found a way to get around much of their fears, and that is simply to go dark on social media. They gave up all their Chinese apps that spy on them, and they likely disappeared from many other prominent social media accounts where data mining is common. No more surveillance for them. Well, it'll be difficult for China to gain control over Hong Kong like it wants to, because these young people are absolutely intent on resisting China to the end. And I hope for their sake it doesn't become the end of them. But indeed, necessity is the mother of invention. They figure out how to use technology today to thwart and frustrate China's attempt to track and monitor them in everything they do. I'm Patrick Wood for Technocracy News and Trends. See you next time.